This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, a weekly podcast hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Full of Beans is here to share the unheard voices of those who are living with, supporting, researching, or working in the field of eating disorders. Each conversation aims to bring a different perspective and understanding so that together we can learn, advocate, and connect to realise we are not alone in our struggles and that recovery is possible. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. And just a gentle reminder that these episodes are not a replacement for therapeutic support. So if you are struggling, please do reach out and know that there will always be someone there to listen. And finally, thank you to our podcast sponsor, Nightingale Hospital, for your continued support. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Harry Nye and his grateful mum, Jackie, who are the hosts of Don't Wait to Change, which began following Harry's personal journey of anorexia for over 10 years. By sharing their story, they hope to help others struggling with mental health conditions, especially boys and men, creating a safe space for candid discussion and support. Their story was absolutely wonderful, and it's one of honesty, compassion, and the power of connection between a parent and child, showing how recovery is not only about healing the individual, but also about transforming their relationships and finding hope together. It was honestly such a joy to speak to both to Harry and his mum Jackie and to understand their experience. There were so many commonalities between mine and Harry's experience, demonstrating that eating disorders don't impact individuals based on their gender or their sexuality, but actually the eating disorders latch on to personality traits amongst other different factors. I really enjoyed this conversation and I hope that you enjoy listening too. Well, it is amazing to have you both on the podcast. So thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
We're doing really well. Thank you very, very much for having us, Hannah.
Yeah,
we're very, very honoured to be here. So thank you so much. And we're doing really well. Yeah, great. How are you?
No, I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Did you guys want to introduce yourselves?
I'm Harry.
And I'm Harry's grateful mum, Jackie.
Yeah, I was hoping you'd do that. We're on the same wavelength. Yeah. I'm always terrible with this because I don't know what to say other than I'm Harry, and I suffered from an eating disorder for 10, 11 years, and it's only been the last year that I've really been in true recovery after going as an inpatient.
We started a podcast when Harry was released from the inpatient unit. He was the first male inpatient on the anorexia ward in Poole Hospital. And what we really struggled with over many years of trying to desperately to help Harry was the lack of support for men. And Harry was always, everything that I researched, everybody that I tried to reach out to was invariably female. And it kind of ate into the ED voice denial of men don't get this. So in the early stages, when we even had a doctor one day, Harry had been for a medical, and she called us and she said to me, is Harry breathing? And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, his blood sugar level was so low, it would indicate he's unconscious. And I said, well, what does that mean? And she said, well, his organs could shut down in the night. And I remember coming back into the living room, because obviously we already could see Harry was rapidly losing weight and we didn't know what this meant. We kept saying something wrong, you've got an eating disorder. And he kept saying, men don't get this, mum. And I came into the living room and I burst into tears and I said to Harry, that was the doctor on the phone. And she just said, you were so undernourished that your blood sugar count indicates that you are unconscious and your organs could shut down. And Harry just went into, well, the ED made Harry go into denial. That's rubbish. I'm sitting here breathing. What? She's talking crap. She's being dramatic. And we were desperate. We were like, please speak to someone, see somebody, Harry. And I think by that point, this had been going on possibly nearly a year before that, maybe not even that long. It's very hard with timelines, isn't it, when you've been through trauma to remember. We called counselling services through my husband's work. And the best they could offer us was a counsellor who wasn't ED specialised. And that was awful. He didn't know what to say to Harry. And by that point, Harry was 16. I could see he was almost traumatised. And then I understood through discussions, this guy was just saying all of the wrong things to Harry, tipping the voice even further. He asked Harry one day, how far do you run? How long do you run for? And Harry said, 40 minutes. And he said, well, why? And Harry tried to explain the voice concept to him that was driving him. And he said, well, why don't you run for an hour and a half? I do. And I was so furious. The guy just didn't get it. He said, I'm really finding it hard to segregate Harry just being a recalcitrant teenager and what you're telling me is this thing going on in his head. And he was so dismissive. So that was when I contacted the NHS and I said, we need specialised support. And in those early sessions, I went along with Harry again. But again, it was very outmoded, very archaic. You know, every session, it was almost like a tick list. We would go in and it would be right, Harry, next week, we want you to start eating peanut butter on toast and a tea cake. All the things Harry hadn't eaten before the eating disorder. But obviously, Harry would sit there and just nod. And I'd be like, what the hell are you doing? If it was that easy, why would I bring him here? Harry kept saying all throughout the years, I need a man to talk to. I need a man. Why is it only just me? And then I reached out to John Evans, who wrote an award-winning book about it. Boys get anorexia too. But John, unfortunately, when Harry reached out to John, this was years later, John had been in recovery. Years after he'd written the book, he was still struggling years later. And Harry was just like, oh my God, I'm never going to get rid of this. You know, even this guy, all these years later, is telling me he's still struggling. And Harry kept saying throughout, I need a man. Like he was seeing females in recovery, but it was like, I need to see a man do this. So it made Harry just think, you lot are overreacting. So Harry said all throughout, if I ever, ever get through this, Mum, I'm going to do something to help other men. I really need to do something to help other men. Now, fortunately, it was a man that helped save Harry and got him into hospital. Thank God, our brilliant and amazing friend, Ronnie Mallion, who we often talk about. But it was through SEED, Eating Disorder Charity, that we reached out to an amazing Gemma Roten. And through Gemma, we saw Ronnie had support through her. And I said, look, there's a man here who's had an eating disorder, Harry. Why don't you contact him? Harry was that typical, oh, I'm not going to, yeah, all right, Mum, I will do it. And I said, I mean it. Please contact this man. Harry didn't expect anything back. And Ronnie responded immediately. Then Harry was a bit overwhelmed and the voice went into that kind of shutdown as it does. Oh my God, no, this person isn't helping me. And so as time went on, Ronnie started to say, I'm here for you. I've been through an eating disorder. I'm 4 years in recovery. You can do this. And then the voice started to convince Harry, well, I'm not that person. But again, I think the reality of meeting Ronnie and talking to him about what he kind of had to do, because Ronnie had been in inpatient unit, Harry was just in, obviously the ED was telling him, no, that's not you. You don't need that help. From there, it kind of spiraled a little bit. And then it got to a point where Harry was getting so emaciated. The thing is, we've been living this for so long. And at this point, as you know, the ED lies, it prevaricates constantly. And my husband and I were so worn down by the lies. And I desperately wanted to believe every time Harry told me he got this, that he got it. So at this point, it's going to sound really bizarre. I could see he was emaciated and wasting away, but he kept telling me, Mum, I'm eating okay. So when Harry'd been up to London and to see my daughter and her boyfriend, and Harry came back and he said, oh my God, Jackie, what the hell? Look at him. And I was like, no, he told me he's eating the toast that we're making him. And then we were finding out things like Harry was discarding the toast. And then he said, I think, Jackie, you need to take him along to an inpatient unit and show him the reality of where he's going to end up. And something just clicked in my head. So I just rung up the ED services, and then they turned around and they said, unfortunately, there's nothing we can do unless he proves a threat to himself. And I said, okay. I said, well, not to talk about that contemplation, although we talked about how he did contemplate taking his life. And I said, but what part of this image doesn't tell you that my son is not a threat to his own life? And I sent her an image I'd caught of Harry one day coming in when he was stretching. And I sent her this image and I said, what part of you doesn't tell you that he is a threat to his own life? He isn't stopping. He hasn't got the capability to stop. And within 2 days, he was an inpatient. They moved so rapidly. So then there was a lot of kicking and screaming because Harry didn't want to go. But subsequently, when he came out of the unit, we said, right, we talked about doing a podcast called Does Mum Know Best? Because we have a lot of deep discussions about all kinds of things. But then Harry said, no, I need to put something out there, Mum. I need to let other men know that there is help and put back out there and get men talking.
Yeah, that's a very long intro. Yeah, that's the life story.
Yeah. Yeah, the very, very long, long version.
But these things can't be condensed. You know, whenever I say to people, you know, tell me about your experience, and I feel awful because it's such a big thing to go through. You know, it's so traumatic. I'm really intrigued, Harry, if you're okay to share. But, you know, Jackie mentioned that you were the first male on the eating disorder inpatient ward. And I mean, I can imagine with there being little awareness, it's very difficult anyway. But what did that feel like?
I did document it at the time how I felt. So my raw emotions, more specific at the time, I have written down. But from memory, and Mum can possibly back me up, is I didn't want to go anyway. So being there, I was very scared. And then, as it does with an eating disorder, it convinces you you're not ill. And there was instantly that denial of I don't need to be here, because starting comparing myself to others on the ward that, oh, I'm not as ill, or I'm not as emaciated. I'm okay. I've got control of this. I can't remember. It was a sudden hit of realization that I was the only guy there, which it was a weird one. I went straight to my room and sort of cried, as I did for like the first 3 days straight. But it didn't help with the voices of denial saying you don't need to be there. It just compounded that it's only for women. Narrative, really, eating disorders.
Like you said, it made the voice double down. I suppose the best way I can describe what you were telling me at the time was I'm in female territory now. This isn't a male thing, Mum. All the people that have let me in here, even they can see, even the staff can see. They must be able to see I'm in the wrong place.
Yeah, it just proved that what the voices were saying, that it's not for men, I'm not ill. Because it was never a case, I don't think it ever really did hit me until I went back in. Because we're touching that, I managed to get myself out for a week and then, but then, funnily enough, I wasn't fixed. But it never really hit me, it took a while to hit me, to make me realise how ill I was and how much help I needed, and to relinquish the ego almost that I thought I could do it myself.
I think also, you know, from experience of what we've been through, I think the added problem when it comes, or the added condition that comes with a male eating disorder, is that kind of societal expectation of being able to man up. And if a man can't handle his emotions, he's weak. And so this was what Harry kept battling. It was like, no, that's a female thing. You know, he not that he dismissed on any level the other girl's struggles, not on any level, he understood entirely what they were going through, but it was more that correlation in his head that, no, I'm not emotionally weak, and this is what we're trying to fix now. Not fix, we're trying to contribute to that understanding that men are human, and as a human, we all have destabilizing feelings. We all feel uncertain. We all feel afraid. That is a human, part of the human condition. And for men to acknowledge that and being able to learn to accept that's part of being human and accept those emotions and work through those emotions.
I think what you're saying there about the kind of emotional aspect of it is really important, because mm-hmm. I think often people focus on the food element rather than the emotions, and often eating disorders are a way to navigate emotions that are coming up, which can be so challenging. But you mentioned that Harry's blood sugar was super low. Could you understand, Harry, that there was physical issues, there were issues, but it's just not an eating disorder? Or was the eating disorder so loud that it was just like, no, you're totally fine, like this is just all nonsense?
Yeah, it's one that I've had throughout my therapy and stuff that a lot of counselors have said, you're very self-aware. And that's been probably the most confusing thing for a lot of them, is while there's that denial, there has been a case of, well, no, this is what I struggle with. These are the voices, and that me being very open to know it's what is going on in my head isn't right, but I know no different almost. And that was actually one thing that it was big help when I was in the inpatient. But when you told me about my blood sugars being low, it was like, well, that's a load of nonsense.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Because I'm still going to the gym and stuff. I'm exercising. I can do this. I'm living my life habitually, even though, yes, it was a struggle. I was still doing things day to day that required a lot of energy mm-hmm. and still achieving that. So for me, it was very easy, or for the eating disorder, to say, look, that doesn't make sense, because if that's the case, you wouldn't be doing X, Y, Z. But then it wasn't until I was like 2 weeks into inpatient that the doctor, because obviously you're monitored for everything, your blood, your weight and things like that, that he just said, your bloods are back in healthy range. And it was just that moment that clicked to me that, okay, so that's all I'm doing here, is I'm getting my body to be healthy again. And it just completely eradicated those voices of fear that the eating disorder convinced you of. Oh, you're going to get fat, gain weight, people aren't going to accept you, blah, blah, blah. Everything that had held me back for so long, that convinced me the eating disorder was the right way to control things, that's all I was aspiring to achieve in the eating disorder unit and wider life, was to just be healthy again.
I find that really, really interesting, because I mean, I had a very similar experience, but mine was with blood pressure rather than my sugars. And I remember my mum saying to me, like, if you don't get better soon, you're going to end up in hospital. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, well, I'm not doing this because I'm trying to like look after myself. I'm doing this to kind of harm myself. Mm-hmm. And so for me, if anything ever came back as normal, that to me amplified the voices. It was like, see, you're totally fine. Like what you were just saying about the gym and stuff. It's like, you're totally fine. I felt like a superhuman because I could do it all when everyone was telling me, no, you can't do that and you're going to be unwell.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, because if there was part of me that I didn't want to go into hospital. I wanted to continue doing what I was doing, destroying myself, going about my daily life. But I guess there is that very perverse sense, and we've spoken about on our podcast how the reward and pain receptors get completely skewed, that you start to seek that pain further and more. So if I do recall, if I didn't wake up feeling exhausted or not struggling, I would question what have I done the day before, that have I maybe eaten too much, or have I looked after myself too well to actually be feeling a bit more human.
I remember as Harry has gone into recovery now, he said, it's really weird that I wake up every day now and my body doesn't hurt. Because he said at first it was almost like a sense of, like he said, that process of almost grieving, like the body goes through when you're in recovery, of what you've been habituated to feel, because your brain's so undernourished. Behaviors has trained you to feel that way. And Harry was almost like, it's a weird sense because my body doesn't ache anymore. When he sat on a wooden chair, he couldn't sit on a wooden chair without sitting on a cushion because there was nothing to protect him. I don't think he probably ever did wake up on a day where he wasn't really aching all over, because as we've talked about, Harry's way of purging was through exercise and calorie deficit. But then the other side, we said the conflicting thing, that feelings that he got, is how you got to that point when he was living in London where he didn't want the pain anymore. He was sick of the pain. He couldn't cope with the pain. And that was when the extremes of, you know, contemplating something, thankfully stopped you. But like he said, he just couldn't carry on living in that pain anymore, even though that was the thing that was driving him. And the thing, like I said, once it was gone, it was almost like, he kept saying when you first came out of hospital as well, I failed at anorexia. Because he's a perfectionist. And again, the drivers, the comorbid perfectionism, ADHD that Harry also has, was convincing him that this was something he found out. Although now as time's gone on, he's realising that cognitive incorrect belief is now adjusted, isn't it? And you're realising that you're winning at recovery.
Yeah, it was a horrible feeling to think that confusion of, because everything that I do, I struggle to say it because it does sound so perverse, but it was my mindset at the time, was everything that I do, I have to do to my best ability, to the detriment of my health, mental or physical or emotional. And the one thing that obviously I'm sure a lot of people find who have gone through eating disorders, particularly anorexia, is you start to, I don't know if you pride yourself on it, but you become very good at being restrictive, and in my case, over-exercising, and just having that, as the eating disorder would convince you, that discipline that no one else has. And it was weird that I felt like I had failed at it, whatever the goal, you could argue what was the goal, but that I no longer behaved or portrayed those, I won't say assets. I struggle to articulate it because it is so weird now to recall back to those moments when I was in that mindset and the emotions and the voices that were going on, because it's, to anyone who hasn't been through it, it does sound very barbaric.
I think thankfully that proves also, lovely one, how far you've come, because you're finding it harder to recall now as you go further down the line in recovery. You're finding those moments and those feelings. I mean, I recorded it. I've been writing a book for about 7 years. I still at some point need to put out there, because that was my catharsism, besides eventually put my husband and I getting help through the new Maudsley technique, because that's another reason we do the podcast, is to help people like us, because we struggled so much to find other people that could understand what we were going through. You know, talking to other people just don't understand, you know, mental health, and the stigma around mental health is bad enough, but you know, particularly a male eating disorder seemed to be way off taboo, you know, subject that people just couldn't comprehend.
People completely, they don't even contemplate the effect that it has on loved ones,
yeah,
friends, family around them. They think it's not just isolated down to the individual suffering. It's sometimes can be a lot harder for the likes of you and Dad, who just feel completely helpless.
Oh, helpless all the time. We spent years and years of just being helpless and hopeless and thinking everything we tried to do just seemed to be wrong. There were so many conflicting advice from counsellors over the years. But I would advocate for anyone who is supporting someone with an ED to go through the new Maudsley technique, because they were amazing. I just wish we'd had them early doors. It just wasn't available then, all those years ago, because it helped us immensely to understand what was going on in Harry's brain that he couldn't control chemically. So when we were getting to the points of, well, you've had counselling now for 2 years and they're going to sign you off, and why aren't you fixed, you know, and desperation, why are you still doing this, and why have you relapsed, and Harry thinking, yeah, why have I relapsed? And then suddenly going to the new mortality, and they were like, this is what's going on in the brain. This is chemically the imbalance. These are the signals. It was like, oh, thank God. Because then it helped us to walk alongside Harry rather than keep pushing Harry to do something that he was out of his control, you know, and he needed help with, which is why he went into inpatient.
Something I wanted to say, which actually I think kind of ties the points together that you were both saying, is Harry, when you were speaking and you were saying about the goalpost for the eating disorder continuously moving, I think that, I mean, that matches my experience as well, in that you have a goal, but before you've even met that goal, you've moved on to the next goal. So you never actually recognize these goals that you're hitting. But equally, what you were saying about kind of the pain and reward, I think that you're, this sounds weird to say, but I was really resonating with what you were saying about exercise and things like that. I found I was able to push myself more and more each time. And that high that came from pushing myself in that way or restricting in a certain way, I guess it's almost like a drug tolerance in the fact that I needed more in order to feel that high.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But I think that for you and I, and I think that's a really important thing to highlight, is, you know, I'm female, you're male. We have literally, sounds like a very similar experience. So it demonstrates that, you know, anorexia doesn't, the mentality of it doesn't differ in gender. Mm-hmm. Obviously the support may need to differ in order, but I think support needs to differ for individuals anyway, let alone, you know, you can't just base it on gender. But my other point was that, you know, if you explain that to me, I'm like, yeah, I totally get it. Like, I completely understand, kind of, I've been there, I went through it. But trying to explain that to a loved one about what you're thinking when they can see how much you're hurting. You know, I remember I lived away from my parents for my last relapse, and I would go home every few months and obviously kind of be deteriorating every time, but I'd still be going outside exercising. And I would say to my mom, I'm just gonna go outside and do some exercise. And she'd be like, should you be doing that? And I'd try and explain to her that I actually, like, I physically needed to. And if I didn't, then I would be a nightmare to be around, and it would help me regulate and blah, blah, blah. And all of those things, those behaviors that as a loved one, you're like, why are you doing this? You are hurting the person that I care about the most in the world. Stop doing this.
Yeah.
You cannot. It's so irrational to a loved one that hasn't experienced it, that explaining what's going on, It's like speaking a different language, if not more.
That can be a whole, well, that has been a whole episode in itself for us, is you and Dad particularly. It was so much a case of, you could see what was going on with the behaviours, but it had to be a case of, you got so browbeaten Groundhog Day that you couldn't stop it. So you just had to accept that, particularly I remember you arguing with Dad, like, well, at least he's eating. Stop trying to force foods on him that you know he won't eat.
Yeah.
Otherwise I would always kick back and right, I'm not eating anything then. And so you would be like, well, at least he's eating something. And then even when I would still be going to the gym and stuff, there was no benefit physical to me going to the gym other than what I started to convince myself mentally for the endorphins and things like that. But even then, you said so many times, people would come up to you in the gym and be like,
say to me, why are you allowing him in the gym? And this is like a 26-year-old man. Why are you allowing your son in the gym? And it was like, but I'm monitoring him. And I had to say to my husband, I'm making sure he's not doing an hour and a half and that he's only doing 30 minutes. And the battles and the arguments my husband and I had, we were on such different pages. You know, like I said, Paul would get angry with me because I'd bought him egg whites, the box of egg whites again, and I'd allow him to have porridge with water, and a bowl full of lettuce, and he'd be like, but he needs to be eating this, you know, this is what they've said he needs to eat. And I'd be like, no, but if you do that, you're going to tip him over and he's going to do something stupid. And the arguments, and again, through the new mortality, we understood the different approaches and how the ED does do that. It wants to have an ally, it needs an ally, so it causes separation. But again, the new mortality helped us understand our opposing approaches and to walk alongside Harry and stop saying, especially when he came out of the inpatient, this is what you need to do, this is what you need to do, and kind of listen to what he was guiding us. People don't understand not just what the sufferer's going through, but the people around them that are watching them, and the complete and utter fear that drives you to, like I said, scream and shout. And
for anyone who's not been through it, the best explanation you can give or reasoning is understand it when you've walked a mile in my shoes, in terms of not me specifically suffering, but the likes from your parents or other loved ones suffering from anyone around them with addictive behaviors, self-destructive behaviors. You, unfortunately, the only way to understand someone's reaction and behaviors and facilitating of that is if you walk through it, because equally it's weighing up the backlash that you and dad would get as well.
Yeah. Oh, terrible. And we've talked about it as well. I would get it more than my husband. I would, as his mother, why is he going to the gym? As his mother, why isn't he? It was really weird. I really felt that kind of gender bias towards me being the problem.
As to
why Harry was in this position and not my husband.
The blame was directed towards you because you go to the gym. I'm influenced by you. My dad still does work
exercise
out and exercise
every day. But the saving grace was, I've got a daughter who was brought up around that, and her whole attitude towards food and exercise is what I would say is normal. You know, Lily goes to the gym 3 times a week. She eats what she wants. She's never really overthought things. And it was like, when I got to that point of the lowest point, when people were looking at me and almost pointing the finger and saying, you know, Jackie, but you do go to the gym. And what do you think that's telling him? And I was like, yeah, it's me. It's me that's the problem. I've done this. I've created this. And then someone said, he has a father too. And I was like, thank you.
But even then, it's eating disorders are multifactorial. And so it doesn't come just down to parenting. It doesn't come just down to genetics or environment. It's an amalgamation of everything. Yeah. And as you've said, you know, your daughter has a great relationship with food and exercise. You know, my mum had a very similar thing, and she really did beat herself up because she'd regularly been on a diet when I was younger. And yes, maybe potentially her being on a diet contributed slightly. We can't avoid that, but there were so many other elements. Yeah. And I think often people are looking for...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Answer, you know, friends and family, they're trying to understand. So they're kind of just grabbing at anything. Oh, well, it must have been because you're on a diet, or it must have been because you went to the gym, because not like there's thousands and thousands of other people that go to the gym on a regular basis
that
don't have children with eating disorders. It's such a difficult thing to conceptualize and understand, as we've said, that they're in their own way trying to understand. But I find it fascinating as well, because it's not very supportive. It's not like you're actually helping somebody by saying that. You're not offering resolutions or anything. You're just blaming, which...
Yeah, you're the problem.
Do you know what it is? That self-preservation thing, isn't it? People just do this automatically. It's almost a bit like when somebody says, oh, that person's got cancer. My father says, yeah, but do they smoke? That won't happen to me because I don't smoke, you know, or do they process food? You see, that won't happen to me. You know, there's almost this thing of that thing of, oh, that's okay. What's Jackie's been through and what Harry's going through, that won't happen to me because I don't do this. So it's almost that virtuous self-preservation, because they see the pain that you're in, and it's like, I won't go through that. And I understand that. And it's, like I said, it's a form of self-preservation.
It's weird for me because I don't see, if I was to put blame on anything, I would say it's solely blame on myself in terms of genetics and environmental factors. The biggest thing for me, learning my ADHD, my perfectionist tendencies, both of them align very much to be impulsive but love to be active. I have to be doing something. And then obviously routine came with that, and then perfectionist tendencies of I can do this. I'm good at this. How can I get better? And it really annoyed me as well when people would especially blame you or try and blame dad. It's like, but even when I would go off, like when I was at uni or working in London, mum and dad weren't there calling me up at 4:30 or 5 in the morning saying, right, get up now, go exercise. Yeah. It's like, it was always something, it was a choice that was driven by myself. Yes, I might have been subconsciously influenced by other things, but equally, I believe with my wiring and my genetic predisposition, I just tuned in to the certain frequencies of other messages, whereas my sister tuned into different things. And so that's not a blame as to what the messages I was being fed. It was just what I decided, what resonated with the way I am.
Okay, so I have this weird theory in my head, and I know that this isn't true, but I think it helps me conceptualize it. And what you've just described there is a perfect example of why my thought comes up about this. People with anorexia, even though they've got different brains, the thought process is very similar. And I had a dream once that there was basically like, think Cookie Monster, but with like loads and loads of blue, like blue spirally arms. And this monster basically was like controlling the simulation. And so clicked a button to be like, hey, yeah, that one's going to have anorexia. And these are the tendencies. Because I guess for other mental health conditions, you know, there's symptoms that people meet, which is how you meet the diagnostic criteria. But I think when you like break things down and people talk about their experiences, they're so similar. And like I had somebody say to me once, you know, when you're exercising, you go to such a dark place. And like I could do that before when I was driven by the anorexia, but I can't now. And I hear so many people talk about how that sort of like anorexic drive or that dedication that they had faded in recovery. But when they were in it, it was like nothing could stop them.
Yeah. Yeah, I was the exact same. It became a sense of like a couple of weeks ago, I was really quite run down and I just had nothing in my legs to when I was on the bike and stuff. And it just part of me used to think that it was part of me that was like, yeah, but you would still do your normal workout or push to do your normal workout no matter how you felt. How did you find sort of not the motivation, but yeah, how did you dig so deep to get through that? Because today I'm just feeling absolutely pooped. And it was a case of, and that's why my relationship with obviously exercise became very, it was just horrible, because while it was a necessity, I just dreaded it every time because of the pain that I knew I was going to put myself through. But so someone always said to me is like, and that became a pride thing, was having the discipline and drive to constantly go to those dark places, that I was like, oh, no one else can do this. This is something unique and special to me. But someone did come up to me and say, you do you ever rest? You work out, you work so hard. And I was like, no. He's like, oh, I guess you can rest when you're dead then. But I've tried, it's funny because I was listening to a podcast as well about athletes and stuff. And one guy was doing the ski erg and he just collapsed because he was going so hard that his heart just was beating too fast. And there was part of me that was like, right, I'm going to see how hard I can go with the gym today and see if I can try and make myself faint and collapse. But when I try and reach those heights now, it's very, there is a case of almost a form of PTSD response in terms of the trauma coming back that I experience is all too quick. So when I do try and go for those extra few seconds or reps, there's almost like a handbrake comes up and just stops me from getting there. And as a form of just saving myself, no, just don't go there.
And what was really great now, I found even a couple of weeks ago, Harry used to, whenever we had some kind of celebration, Harry would overcompensate the next day in the gym. And that became a regular thing. So even when we got for family get-togethers at Christmas, people would say, but he's eating loads. And I used to think, no, you just don't understand what this is going to mean for the rest of the week now. And it was his birthday last weekend. And we had pizza and everything, and he went into the gym the next day. And hearing things like this is so amazing now that he's going through recovery. And he said, the voice did say, well, hold on a minute, you ate pizza yesterday, but I brushed it away. And like you said, you can pull the handbrake now. And it's like, for me to witness that and know that Harry, like he said, he can tap into that Harry, that side of the eating disorder now. And you mentally can put the hat. It meant recovery has meant you can mentally, you do put the handbrake on.
Yeah, I think that's a nice thing to touch on, because we haven't mentioned it. And one thing that I always struggle with, and I don't know if you experience it, Hannah, but for me, those voices are always, because I believe that's a lot down to my genetics in terms of being driven, being a perfectionist. But it's now being in a place, both physically and mentally, where I can be like, actually, no, those voices that the eating disorder is trying to test me with are actually that they're eating disorder voices. This isn't going to help me. This is debilitating. And I'm strong enough now to ignore them, because there was one time I was always, well, I was convinced that I would never have those voices again.
Yeah.
I'd be completely void of all these negative thoughts and things like that. And aspiring to achieve some, what for me was completely senseless, like that was impossible, because of, I do believe, the way that I'm wired. Don't get me wrong, I do get certain times that where it does test me. It's like, if I've had a bad night's sleep, or I'm not feeling as energized, it will try and test me. But that's a case where I just have to be like, no, not today type thing, and just ignore it.
And this is what we need to get across to people listening. And we cannot advocate enough for getting support and intervention and getting that recovery and getting help, because that recovery process will help you put the handbrake on the voice. I think that's probably the best metaphor.
And equally, to emphasize speaking, because when I do struggle as well, just speaking to you and Dad saying, look, I'm not feeling myself today, I'm XYZ, I'm struggling, that it's just even throwing it into relief to make me realize what I am saying, it's not helpful, it's not right, and just make sense of it all, which the importance of speaking out.
I think I really relate to what you were saying about the fact that the voice is still there. And I think that is what makes recovery so difficult, because, you know, what you were saying about people calling you disciplined or what have you, because particularly in the gym culture, and I think in general life anyway, those behaviours are glorified. And so when you're trying to recover from them, but then people are congratulating you for it, it does make it really difficult. And one thing that I found this time around in my recovery is actually, you know, those thoughts are still there, but like you said, it's that ability to put the brake on and actually reflect, okay, what is this trying to tell me? Because sometimes I'll have the thought and it's like, yeah, okay, cool, that, you know, that's really nice that you said that to me, but I don't need that right now. Whereas other times I will notice that I feed into them a little bit more and I let them linger a bit longer. And then maybe sometimes I do act on particular behaviours. And it's at that point that I'm like, okay, what's going on right now? Like, is there something going on in my life? Like, do I feel, you know, upset about something that's happened with a friend or a family member, or is work feeling a little bit, or, you know, is something going on? And being able to have that like cognitive process of, okay, eating disorder thoughts have got louder, therefore something is not feeling quite right. What is that? And now who can I talk to that about? And sometimes I'll just say to my partner, like, I don't need you to have the answer right now, but I just need to tell you that I'm struggling with this meal, or I feel weird in my body right now. I don't really know why, but I just need to vocalize that. And I found that so, and some, like, most of the time he's just like, what do you want me to say? I'm like, nothing. I don't need anything from you. I just need to say it out loud. And also, you don't need to worry. We're not going backwards. We're actually, this is going forwards. But for me, that's been really helpful to take that thought, vocalize it, and be like, okay, it's not gone, but it's I've almost made it real, which means that it's not sitting and stewing in my brain anymore.
Yeah, and that's precisely what it was. Well, honestly, but Hannah, because over the years, I kept saying to Harry, you will get voices of doubt, you will get the imposter syndrome, this is just called being human, Harry. But and Harry kept saying, but I want the voice to go. And it was like, but like you said, now when he, especially, which has been brilliant, and I've really noticed in recovery, because obviously the voice wants you to isolate, it wants you to shut down and be away from people, which was why it got worse when he went away, because there was nobody keeping him or it accountable. And but now Harry will say, her wake up and say, I say, how are you doing, lovely? Like I do to my husband every day, whatever. And Lily, when she was here living at home, how are you doing? And Harry would go, oh, I'm feeling crap. And then he'll talk it through. And then he'll say, you know, I'm feeling lousy, da, da, da. And he can actually talk it through and he can rationalize. Yeah. And that's the thing that recovery has given him, the ability to rationalize. Like you said, Hannah, quite rightly, I'm feeling run down at the moment, or work is particularly overwhelming. There's a lot of pressure on me. I'd really have had two nights really bad sleep. And he can rationalize, this is why the voice is getting louder now. Yeah. So I can say to the voice, actually, you can piss off because I have had two nights where I've slept really badly, or where I'm getting a lot of pressure from work and I'm just stressed. So I don't need to buy into your dialogue. I can actually challenge that. And you can rationalize the voice now and you talk to us about it more, which is another thing that comes through with
well, I was going to say that's one more thing that I want to touch on. You say speaking to your partner about is that is something as well through recovery that I've been that I've fallen foul of is actually speaking to you and dad, is having the bravery as well to just share your struggles with other people. Because like you said, there was always that fear that, oh, if I show vulnerability to mum and dad, they might think I'm going backwards. They might think they're struggling, is warning signs, warning bells, when really I know it's not. I just need to offload it.
So somebody supporting a man, let that man talk, because like I said, again, society's conditioned to not let men speak up or speak out that today's about. They need to be able to speak. They need to be able to rationalize it, and they need you to be able to be there to walk alongside them and help them.
I genuinely think one of the best things to come out of my eating disorder, because you have to look on the positive side, is my dad has watched me go from being mute to being one of the most open, heart on my sleeve kind of people about my emotions. And it has helped him to talk about his emotions so much. And whenever I go home now, we have, like, you know, he's not like pouring his heart out, because my dad is not that, he just would never be like that. But, you know, he will tell me about things and tell me about his past and how they impacted him. And they were never conversations that we were able to have. So I do think that although eating disorders are absolutely awful, if your loved ones are there for you, it can often bring you a lot closer. Now, I wish that it didn't have to be an eating disorder that did that, but silver linings.
Yes, you're right. Exactly. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, definitely.
Exact same with my relationship with my sister. It pulled us apart for so long. I would argue with now how recovery has brought us back, it has made that bond even stronger.
Yeah.
And you said that over the kind of past year or so, you've been engaged in recovery. What was it that sparked that shift into thinking, okay, right? Because you said you were in a point where you're in so much pain that you didn't want that anymore, but it sounded like at that point it was either kind of being here or not being here. What was it that then led to recovery?
Well, it was going into as an inpatient where it was completely taken out of my hands. And it's one that, as much as I would love to and did try to, 10, 11 years sort of demonstrated otherwise that I couldn't do it by myself. I would always get to a sticking point. And yes, I could get my weight up, but that it didn't address what the root of the cause was, the mental trauma and the mental damage that I was doing to myself, the voices that I needed addressing. Because there are plenty of times when I was at uni, I was at one of my quote unquote strongest in terms of my weight, what I was able to lift in the gym. And again, I know that's a terrible barometer, but just for the generic absolute measures on the outside, you might have seen, there's no sign of an eating disorder or anything like that. And so you think, oh, okay, so he's not restricting, he's healthy, he's doing a lot in the gym, he can move a lot of weight, blah, blah, blah. But I was doing 5-6 hours of exercise a day, because mentally I had to justify the calorie intake, the routines, and again, also the foods I were eating were still very strict and restrictive to clean eating, whole foods, nothing, not deviating out of anything like that. So my life was still absorbed by these obsessive behaviors that I still hadn't broken, even though I was just in a slightly heavier body.
Get used into the muscularity side of it, like you said earlier, Hannah, with men, people don't realize the disordered behaviours that go on behind that image for men and how that becomes habituated. If you'd weighed him, and this is where over the years when he was let go of outpatient support, was when he reached a certain weight. They got to a point where after a couple of years, it'd be like, right, we've got to let you go now, Harry, because you're just hovering around here. And we've got other people we need to focus on. And I was just desperate. I was like, no, he's not fixed. Please, I don't know why he's not fixed, but he's not fixed. I know his weight reaches your criteria that he is fixed, but he really isn't. Please help me. And it was like, no, there's nothing we can do. We have to let him go. And so, like he said, years later, when he went through that and he was coming back from uni and he was, you know, strongest probably I'd ever seen him, the behaviours around it, the disordered behaviours, were still very much ingrained. Like he said, oh, yes, he was. I remember him coming home, surprising me for Mother's Day, and he sat down to roast lamb and he ate the lamb. And I was like, oh, my God, don't make a fuss, don't make a fuss. And my father was sitting there. I was like, please don't make a fuss, just let him eat it. And I remember him thinking, oh, my God, you know, not realising that really, because when he went back to Cardiff, then he was still caught in these behaviours. Yeah, but then that was 4 hours in the gym the next day to compensate for that. So although he looked surface, and his BMI would have been indicated to a medical team that he wasn't struggling, but gosh, yes, he was struggling hugely. Yeah. So as we've talked about, the understanding around the demarcations around somebody who is fixed really needs to be addressed.
Definitely. And I think that's such a common thing to happen, is to go from that point of, you know, looking ill and behaving ill, to then I personally found anyway in my own recovery that my body caught up a lot quicker than my brain did. And so, yes, my body looked fine, but my brain was still really, really struggling. And those coping mechanisms became things like exercise, because you can't use the food to cope anymore, so exercise to cope with the food. And I just can't quite believe this, because I also went into exercise and went into powerlifting and got all muscular and everyone thought I was okay. But I also went to Cardiff Uni.
I just can't believe that.
And I'm 28 years old, so this is crazy.
Oh, she must have been here the same time as Harry then.
But yeah. I only went to Cardiff Uni for 6 weeks because I had to drop out. But when you said Cardiff, I was like, oh my God, this trajectory is so similar.
That's funny. That's really
we might funny. Have even like walked past each other in the same gym or something.
Yeah, literally. We probably did walk past each other in the gym, let's be honest. But yeah, I think, you know, that's such an important thing. And I think particularly, you know, when we are talking about male eating disorders, I find it actually like quite a difficult thing. I don't know where to like position myself in terms of the conversation, because there's so much chat around muscle dysmorphia, and I really do appreciate that, and we need to be having those conversations because those behaviors are very normalized. And I think that, you know, it goes back to what you were saying at the start in terms of like men are strong, like men cannot be weak, men cannot show emotion. So if you're struggling in the gym, you know, that's not as quote unquote the sign of a man. So you push yourself harder and you do things like that. But equally, yes, those conversations are really important. And I think for me, we just need to be having them all. Muscle dysmorphia is not the only eating disorder that men struggle with. And, you know, as you've spoken about today, men struggle with anorexia and men completely struggle in very similar, if not the same, ways as women do. Men struggle with binge eating disorder, men struggle with bulimia, men struggle with aphid. Like I'm just grateful to you guys for opening up this conversation and having it more, because the amount of times you hear, well, men don't get eating disorders, or the thing that I don't like the most is men get eating disorders too, because it almost feeds into the idea that men don't get eating disorders, so after clarifying that they do too. But that's terminology and that's me going too deep. But I really, really appreciate you sharing your story, and I'm sure so many people will also appreciate it. So where can people go to listen to your podcast, find out more about you, get in contact? Because I'm sure there will be lots of people that want to speak to you both.
Well, I let my mum do the housekeeping work with that, because you're the better side of promoting the stuff. But no, just to touch on what you were summarizing there, is definitely our experience is solely an example of anorexia and the struggles around that. But as we've learned as well, and as our message tries to portray, is the eating disorders encompass a whole realm of different forms of struggles, but the premise remains the same, that it stems from a symptom of a coping mechanism driven by whatever that may be, but where you are not in a comfortable state of mind with yourself, and so therefore you lead to, and it typically evolves around food or exercise or self-worth
and control.
Yeah, and so, and because we're all too aware, especially as you know, in a gym environment in particular, disordered, whether it's an eating disorder or disordered eating, disordered behavior it's rife, and it's finding that balance, because it can all too quickly tip up to
just be
unhealthy.
I think really our message is trying to push and underline that, as we said, eating disorders don't discriminate. And there is intersectionality as well that needs to be taken into account as well with eating disorders, which definitely needs more support. But yeah, our podcast is called Don't Wait to Change. That's W-E-I-G-H-T as in wait. And we called it Don't Wait to Change based on the premise that for many years, as we said, recovery was defined within the medical profession as Harry reaching a certain weight, but that weight did not indicate the state of his mind that really needed help. So that's why we called it Don't Wait to Change. We're on Instagram, we're under Don't Wait to Change, one word, isn't it?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, Don't Wait to Change. And yeah, we really do encourage anybody and everybody to reach out to us, because as we say, we're not clinicians, we're not ED specialists, but we just hope to contribute to the knowledge that is out there through our lived experience, and help others, like we said, even as we spoke about earlier, just especially people, those supporting someone with an ED, get to the new mortal fleet really early doors. Even when you're in a place of denial yourself and you can't quite comprehend, please speak to those guys, because they are brilliant and they will help you to help that loved one as well.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much. It's honestly been a pleasure to speak to you both.
Yeah, thank you, Hannah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode on the Full of Beans podcast. I really hope you did enjoy it. As a little reminder, this is not a replacement for therapeutic advice, so please do seek support if you are struggling, and know that there will always be somebody there to listen. Many thanks once again to our podcast sponsor, Nightingale Hospital. Have a lovely week, and I will see you next week for another episode of the Full of Beans podcast.